Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Kim Setter, attorney number 14294, on behalf of Pivotal Parker Commercial. And with me is Jeff Erb, attorney number 37961. I want to jump immediately into the issues in this case without discussing any of the facts because they become of minimal importance because of the legal issues involved. The issues in this case hinge on the plain language of a document which is Exhibit H, called the Seventh Amendment. Paragraph 6 of the Seventh Amendment is entitled Assignment of Development Fee Revenue. At the time the Seventh Amendment was signed, there was a development fee in existence that had been properly imposed by the Board of Directors of the Cherry Creek South Metropolitan District Number 1. In addition, that development fee had in fact been generating revenues. And as noted on the Seventh Amendment, the paragraph dealt with assignment of development fee revenues. The development fee that had last been set by the Board of Directors of the district was contained in its 1998 budget. The development fee was $73,894 per acre of commercial property that was being developed. Testimony further developed this into developed the notion that this fee was collected at the time a building permit was obtained for the development or construction on the property. The district has the power to adopt such a fee by delegation from the state of Colorado under 32.1.1001.1.J.I. The delegation includes the language that the board of the district may pledge such revenue for the payment of any indebtedness of the special district. And in fact, the Seventh Amendment was a pledge of payment for payment of an indebtedness. And again, the Seventh
Amendment. I mean, who's collecting? Is the revenue going to the district directly, or is this a third party, in essence, collecting for the district?
It would have been simpler, Your Honor, if the district had been collecting the revenue.
I would think a lot simpler.
Yes, it would. But in fact, under the Seventh Amendment and in the party's practice after the signing of the Seventh Amendment, the SDI was collecting that revenue.
And do you think this statutory framework authorizes that practice?
I don't think it authorizes it, but I don't think it necessarily prohibits it either.
Let me follow up with it. Did you specifically argue to the lower court that the district couldn't assign its right to these fees to the developer, or did you make a narrower argument that impliedly that assignment was valid but the developer couldn't mark up the fees?
The first issue that you raised, Your Honor, we do not argue that the developer is not entitled to receive the development fee.
But this case is really about the markup and the perpetual lien.
It is, Your Honor.
Yeah. And possibly also about when the fee is due.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So because of that power to pledge revenue that we just cited from 32.1.1001.1.J.I, we never took the position that SDI could not or was not entitled to receive $73,894 per acre of commercial property at the time the property obtains a building permit. However, SDI is not, as a matter of law, entitled to change the district's development fee. It is the district's fee. It is imposed under the district's governmental powers, consistent with 32.1.1001. SDI was only entitled to receive the revenues as specifically stated in the Seventh Amendment. And this concept is unambiguously clear in the assignment language of the Seventh Amendment. Paragraph 6 is entitled Assignment of Development Fee Revenues. The language states, the district shall assign to STRO, which is SDI, and STRO shall have the right to receive the following revenues that the district would otherwise have received, including but not limited to the development fees. There were other revenues involved in this process. It then further states, the amount that STRO shall be construed as having received, considered as having received, pursuant to said assignment, whether actually received or not, is a cumulative total of $9,882,463, provided that the timing and actual receipt of said revenues is uncertain. Despite that clear language, STRO sought, and the court ultimately adopted a ruling that made that amount certain in a manner that, number one, is contrary to the law of assignments, and number two, is in violation of the laws governing local government's powers to impose such fees. Neither SDI nor the court has the power to change the district's development fee in any way. First, the assignment language itself in the Seventh Amendment is clearly not ambiguous.
And so, now, I hope you will get to a point that I think is important here. As I understand your colleague's argument, the assertion is not that they changed the fees or the fee structure, but rather they just charged interest on the existing fee. So I hope you'll address that point.
I will address that, Your Honor. And in fact, if you want me to do it right now, I can jump to that. But first of all, charging interest on the amount of the development fees is changing the fee. The ability to charge interest on a governmental fee is delegated to the government. These governmental entities only exist because their powers are delegated by the state of Colorado. Outside that delegation, they have no power. The ability to assess interest on fees under 32.1.1001 is contained in another statute, 29.1.1101 and 11.2, which talks specifically about interest on municipal entities' fees and charges, and provides specific parameters within which that interest can be charged. So again, the ability to charge interest is part of that governmental power, which we will talk about in a minute, cannot be delegated, conveyed, or assigned to anyone other than the government working through its elected board. So as for the assignment language, the revenue is derived from the district's development fee, not some other fee modified or enhanced by SDI or the court. Secondly, neither SDI nor the court could have the power to change the district's development fee in any way, because as a matter of municipal and constitutional law, neither has the power to change the fee. It is based on an assessment from a governmental power delegated in 32.1.1001. According to 32.1.1001, the power is exercised only by the district's elected board of directors. And that provision also provides for the assignment of revenue to pay debt, specifically saying only the revenue may be pledged or assigned to pay a debt.
And what do you mean by revenue as it's used in this in this sentence, in this statute?
Revenue being the funds that are generated by the district's fee. So the power to set the fee is set out in 32.1.1001. It is a power of the elected board of directors. The revenue from that fee can now be pledged to pay a debt. But the fee itself cannot be pledged. In that same statute, we have the perpetual lien that I believe one of you asked about a little bit earlier. The perpetual lien is also a government function. It's called a perpetual lien because it provides specific enforcement powers and specific priority that applies only to governmental liens and not to private liens. The setting of fees and rates is a legislative function. Setting rates and fees is legislative, according to our Supreme Court in Krupp versus Breckinridge, 19 P. 3rd, 687 at 693 and 4. Bennett Bear Creek Farms versus City and County of Denver at 928 P. 2nd, 1254, and specifically at 1268. And Bainbridge Inc. versus Board of County Commissioners, 53 P. 3rd, 646. At 649. Legislative functions cannot be assigned, delegated, or contracted away under our Constitution.
Can I ask you a hypothetical question? What would happen in your view if the assignment here had said fees as assessed by government Schedule A, which can be amended and shall be amended by the government from time to time? Thereby essentially leaving the business of changing the fee structure to the government, but just assigning the right to receive that money. Would that be proper?
That would be proper.
Okay. So there's no reason that they couldn't have set it up that way.
That's correct. And in fact, I believe without saying so, the statute creates that result because the government can't assign or give away its legislative power. So regardless of what that provision says, the government maintains that legislative power.
But if they could assign that, they could not lien if it were unpaid, if it's assigned to a third party, a private entity.
No, because I don't think the fee can be conveyed. Only the revenue can be assigned to a third party. So if there's a default, the governmental lien comes into play, but it is still the government's lien based upon the government's development fee to collect the revenue that may go somewhere else. Does that make sense?
No.
Well, let me try it this way. Are you saying that whatever fees you concede are payable? If they don't get paid to the developer, does that mean the district could come in and file a lien to protect the developer's right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this is idle curiosity, I suppose, but the lower court's judgment was about $4 million, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Under your theory that the developer can't mark it up, what should the judgment have been?
That's correct.
No.
The developer can't change the...
Okay, well, what does the $4 million shrink down to if you take out what you call the developer's markup?
If you back it into...
Back it into $73,000 an acre.
And that's where you end up, Your Honor, is at $73,000 an acre.
So it's $2 million and change, $2.5 million roughly.
Well, no, because... Because
it's not due yet.
That's right. It's not due yet. And that becomes very important because there is a reason that the government adopted the fee in the form of a per acre fee collectible at the time of building permit. Because in a development like this or any other development, things change. So a road is built to access these different parcels. That road takes up developable property. There are fewer acres that are going to ultimately pay the development fee. What the developer here did, and what the court did in essence, was to take this fee of $73,894, multiply it by all the acres that were around in the property, add the interest and other charges, and then divide it up or allow it to be divided up so that the developer ultimately gets this aggregate number. There is no concept of this aggregate number in the district's fee. It is just this $73,894 per acre.
I'm exhausted, Council.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Martin Byer. May it please court and counsel. I'm appearing on behalf of the plaintiff SBI, who is the appellee in this case. The very premise of this appeal is flawed because it does rest on asking this court to overturn implicit findings that were never made while overlooking explicit factual findings that were. This argument about the Seventh Amendment was a pledge and that the language is unambiguous was raised to the district court via summary judgment. It was denied on the court's determination there were issues of fact, and this case, in fact, went to trial. The district court did not anywhere in its ruling find implicitly or otherwise that SDI was ever assigned the right to set or the right to charge the commercial development fee rate. The district court heard testimony from Larry Beardsley, who was the district's accountant, who testified that he and Gary Hunter, the principal of SDI, negotiated to settle the district's debts. And the district owed, I believe it was approximately $22 million to the developer at this stage, and wanted to find a way to settle that overall debt. Part of that settlement was, in fact, a negotiated agreement that there would be a commercial development fee set for the property, and that fee would be set at $79,528 for commercial development, which is at the in the district court's fact finding in paragraph 17. And that based on that, the district court found that those same numbers, there were other rates as well, were taken to the board for adoption. So the district court found that before the Seventh Amendment, in essence, went into effect, that the board did adopt this higher rate. And that higher rate resulted in a large $2 million number, which the court has made reference to, of what the development fee was, and that was the component piece of the settlement that reduced the district's debt. Now, it's interesting that Your Honors have, in fact, asked about, well, who is collecting the debt and who is, who's going to collect the fee here. Well, the fact is, the district did not want to continue doing what it was doing in this regard. And Mr.
Bye.
Well, I'm not really sure if the answer why was ever disclosed at trial.
Logically, there's debt and not much development going on, so there's not a lot of development fee coming in directly as revenue. That's what it seems happened here.
That's true, Your Honor, although at this stage the development hadn't actually stalled out as the economy hadn't really slowed down. But I believe there was just some sense that, they had been beholden, they being the district, had been beholden to this developer for a long, long time. The debt was mounting because they were using these bond anticipation notes on a fairly regular basis, which themselves accrued interest, to deal with the monies that they had kept borrowing, and they ultimately just wanted to find a way to clean their hands of the developer and the debt and just part ways amicably. And that is, in fact, the settlement that this Seventh Amendment accomplished. Now, having gone ahead and done that, what the district ultimately did was stop setting development fees. And the evidence submitted at trial showed in its budgets that there no longer was a commercial development fee set. There was no longer a commercial develop, no longer any commercial development revenue that was coming in.
That was after 1998.
This was actually after 2000, Your Honor.
Okay.
So really what the district did is it really kind of got out of the business of dealing with the development fee for the properties that were located within its boundaries.
Help me understand the numbers here. If we take, and forgetting about that some of the acreage may have been chewed up in roads and so forth, if we take the 79,000 per acre times the total acreage in filings 14 and 15, do we get a little bit over 2 million?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well then help me understand very specifically, what's the difference between that number slightly over 2 million and the number over 4 million in the trial court's order?
It is 8% interest compounded annually from the date of the assignment.
How can you compound, I'm forgetting about the delegation of powers, how can you compound an interest on a debt before it's due?
Well, the situation is I think a little bit akin to what you see in a tax situation. I mean, taxes are assessed, but they may not be due until later. And this is a situation where the fee was assessed. And the Metropolitan District weighed whatever factors they usually did in deciding what that rate ought to be. But the fact that it doesn't actually come due until later doesn't need to be paid until later doesn't mean that it's not due at some point in time. And what the evidence before the district court showed at trial was that the Metro District had in fact regularly sort of built into their assessments an interest advancement that occurred periodically over time, and it was forecast to do so. The district's forecasts were supposed to go, I believe, until 2019, and they had a regular incremental interest increase every year that increased the rate, so to speak, simply to reflect the time value of money. As a developer...
Okay, but all right, and this may be a needless anguish over terminology, but what I hear you saying is that as a practical matter, the district contemplated increasing the development fee, and it explained that by calling it interest and time value of money. It's not essentially interest being assessed on an unpaid bill.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I believe that's very consistent with what the district found. The district court essentially found that what the district was assigning was an established fee for a certain amount that was owed as of that particular day, in fact, had it been collectible that day, but that it was also the district's intent that that amount should increase for the time value of money, because the district certainly would have done so as well. And where that comes in is in the Seventh Amendment's own language, because the Seventh Amendment doesn't just say that the district is pledging the development fee. It says it is pledging the development fee that the district would otherwise have received. There was absolutely no evidence to the contrary presenting anything to suggest that what the developer did was anything different than what the district would have done.
Well, could I interject a question? What authority, and this is consistent with what I was asking your opposing counsel, what authority is there for the district to assign whatever it was that was assigned here, the collection of the development fee to a private party?
Well, I believe it's more broadly in the common power statute if it requires a specific place.
Well, I'm looking at 32.1.1001, because that seems to list a number of very specific powers that a board has.
It does, Your Honor. And I really believe because this wasn't just a pledge, that this was a pledge plus, so to speak, because they were getting out of the business, that while Subpart J of 32-1001 deals with fixing the fee and then pledging the revenue. To the extent that there needs to be some other power specifically granted by the General Assembly to the district, I suppose it could as easily be, if it's not implicit in J, subpart F authorizes a district to require, dispose of, and encumber real and personal property, including without limitation rights and interests in property. So the statute certainly envisioned that the district could transfer more than just, or could do more than just pledge revenue. In fact, this is not, this couldn't really just be the pledge revenue situation, because under Mr. Sutter's theory, there really isn't anything here that would allow the Metro District from tomorrow going back and getting into a meeting and deciding, oh, well, we're going to change the development fee to zero now. And so SDI, you can't collect anything. Well, I mean, that would be antithetical to what this agreement was all about.
Well, that would violate the clear intent of the parties.
It would certainly, that was precisely my point, Your Honor.
Okay, but isn't that a different line of inquiry from what Judge Furman suggests, in that where in the statute does it contemplate a separation of the power to jack up the fees from the district, who's subject to some sort of voter supervision, to a private party who isn't. I mean, it seems to me that the analog of your example of the district gets together and says we're going to reduce the fees to zero would be the developer says, well, you know, things are tough, we're going to jack up the fee 50% every year. And then people in the plaintiff's position, whoever was the plaintiff here, people in Pivotal's position, under your approach, have no remedy.
Right. Well, I mean, raises a difficult point, and I believe this was addressed by the district court correctly in the legal section of its ultimate ruling, which was that the statute doesn't appear to address this. And where the statute is silent, what does the court look to? Well, under the Tivoli case, the court looks to the common law in a situation where a governmental right, so to speak, was assigned to a private party. And what the Tivoli case held was that this was a case involving the FDIC, which had assigned a note to a private party. The private party sued beyond the Colorado statute of limitations for that particular, you know, for non-payment of the note. Nevertheless, the Colorado Supreme Court held in the Tivoli case that because the federal law that allowed the FDIC to transfer the note was silent as to the overall effect of the assignment, that the court needed to look to the common law. And once you look at the common law says what the common law is, what power did the assignor have, and the assignee then steps into its shoes. This is, you know, it's a standard assignment law, and we cited to the district court, and the district court adopted our reference to a case, I believe it was Olvera out of the Seventh Circuit, which dealt with this situation in a related context where a credit card company in one state was allowed to assess interest at a higher level than a private party because it was a licensed entity. And what the court there held was, doesn't matter that this debt collection company was not licensed, the debt collecting was an assignee. And as an assignee, it stood in its assigner's shoes, and it could do what its assigner could lawfully do.
You get to that analysis because you read the statute as being silent on whether the right to jack up the fee is assignable.
It doesn't really speak to the effect of an assignment, yes, Your Honor, and how that, how it really doesn't speak to the interest issue or the accumulation issue directly.
Is there language in the statute that would permit an expansive instruction such as special districts powers include but are not limited to the following? Or on the other hand, does the statute simply enumerate specific powers without any language that would allow a court to engraft additional powers?
I don't believe that what the statute does is limit the court in that regard.
Is there language that suggests a broader interpretation?
Just looking at the statute here, I'm not seeing anything that speaks to it either way. It doesn't really specify these are enumerated powers. It just indicates that for and on behalf of special districts, the board has the following powers, and then they are listed. They are listed in, however, as I mentioned, some very broad language, which allow it to acquire, dispose of, and encumber personal real property, as well as pledging their assets and their liens. I believe I'm just about out of time, so I would ask the court to affirm the trial court, and could answer any last questions if there are any.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course.